We're talking your personal computer now with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. Thanks for listening in. If you have a question for Pete, I hope you'll join us. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. And you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Pete, welcome back.
Always great, Larry.
And boy, we get callers online to visit with you.
Feels like summer's already started.
Yeah, well, let's go right to the phones. What sure. do you say? Tom in Plain is up first here. Tom, hello.
How you doing today?
Good.
Hi.
I have a question about, I have a PC, and when I pull up a program, the box comes down in the toolbar, but there's no verbiage in it. So basically, you know, I use Windows 98 still.
Yeah, okay.
And I just have no lettering on the toolbars. Or the, you know, when you pull up a box, the to-do is up on top of that box. Does that help at all?
So is there anything on your bottom, they call a status bar, is there anything on across the bottom? Or is it just like a blank?
Sure.
It's just blank?
I have my startup stuff down on the right. My if I'm on the internet, mm-hmm. you know, the green windows will pop up down there.
Right.
But when I open up a program,
right,
the toolbar on the program shows no lettering, and down in the left corner where my toolbar goes across the bottom, where it says start,
mm-hmm.
if
right.
I go to start, it doesn't read start. It's just a box.
Okay. Well, let's see. It's a challenging one. Number one is you can right mouse click on your bottom part of the screen where you launch your programs.
Right.
And you might be able to look at some of the choices there in terms of properties and making changes to get it to appear. It sounds like there's something somewhere that went off, you know, or amiss that needs to be corrected. That's one option. The other option is you might want to go to a website like annoyances.com or annoyances.org. It's probably .com, but it's about annoyances for the Windows operating system. So you probably could go to Windows 98, you know, the resource there, and then do a search through their main page and see what you come up with. Unfortunately, Microsoft has sunsetted the Windows 98 operating system. In other words, they're no longer supporting it. So if there's any patches that you've missed in applying or have to get, you'd have to be directed to a site that might have them available.
Okay. Well, good luck.
Those are the things that I would look at.
Thanks for calling. Louise in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Louise.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm not that computer literate, but I have a problem with I disconnect very quickly after I'm on. I have an E machine.
Okay.
And my family's telling me I have one of these family owned internet services, you know, and they're telling me that it's that service, the internet service people's
provider.
How are you connected? Are you a dial-in connection?
Yeah.
Okay. What you need to check with your internet service provider is compatibility. Sometimes there are compatibility issues with modems and the phone banks or the ports that you call into.
Okay.
And it's not too common now, but it does happen. And what you need to do is talk to a technician that can have you dial into a specific port versus the random ones that you're dialing into.
Okay, is that the thing where it might say on there disconnect after each call?
Do you have a setting that says disconnect?
Something, yeah, but at one time it had been connected there, and they told me to take that off, and I did, but the problems come back. And I'm just wondering, I think when I call them, they tell me there's something wrong with the computer, and when I call the computer or other people, they say it's with the service provider.
That's typical.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. You know, I mean, I don't want to.
So does it drop off while you're online?
Uh-huh.
So you're connected and all of a sudden it goes away.
Right, and very quickly and hardly on. I mean, how do you want to use it? Because
right.
Because I get disconnected so quickly.
Right. Well, what, you mentioned a setting that was changed. You might want to play with that setting.
Okay.
And then, you know, save that and then reboot your computer and then, you know, try it again.
Well, I did, you know, I looked again and it was unchecked. You know, when I could find it, now I forgot how to get there. But it was unchecked before. But I'll just, like I said, or if I change from email to Internet Connect, from Outlook Express, it'll disconnect.
Mm-hmm.
If I switch to another, you know, whatever from
another program,
right? It disconnects very quickly.
I would. What operating system are you using? Windows. Which version?
Windows. Not the real new one.
95. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, the one with that. I used to use a program, and I don't even know if it's available anymore, but it was called Stay Connected. But the one issue, I would check with the compatibility issue, because I remember that being a problem with older machines and modems. How old's the modem? The machine and the modem? Do you know?
The machine's just about 3 years old.
Okay, and the modem is about the same age?
I don't know. That's a lot older.
So why do you have such an old operating system? Did someone give this to you?
Yes. it was a gift. And I keep hinting, but all they tell me to do is change the provider service.
Right.
So, I'll try
You know, other options that I would try, you know, aside from the compatibility issue, is looking at, uninstalling and reinstalling the modem. Possibly updating the drivers for the modem would be another option. But the problem you're going to have is if your connection isn't consistent,
So then changing to, say, high speed wouldn't necessarily help? Or
High speed would be a different connection for you. You would go through DSL, for example, would be through the phone lines, but you would actually connect up with an Ethernet port from the DSL modem to your computer or to a router that distributes it to other computers. Same thing with a cable modem. You would also have an Ethernet cable from your cable modem to your PC. So you would have to make sure, and more than likely you do have an Ethernet port. And in that case, the internet is basically on all the time, unless the internet service provider for some reason goes down. Or, for example, last week we had a fiber optic cut and some people had problems getting on and it was slow. And it was not the internet service provider's fault. It was someone in construction mistakenly cut a line. So it caused problems for everybody.
So I don't know if I quite understand. So are you saying it probably would be better if I went on high speed?
A high speed connection is more consistent. Once you get it to work, once it's installed, it's on all the time.
I see.
And if you shut your computer off, it's actually still on. When you turn your computer on, then it connects and you're there.
Okay.
So it never really goes away unless you cut off or shut off the connection equipment.
Okay.
And it would be a lot faster.
Pardon?
It would be the access would be a lot faster.
Oh,
the pages would load a lot faster.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Good
thanks.
Luck.
Yeah. Thanks, Louise. Steele in Neenah is up next. So let's go there. Hi, Steele.
Hey. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'm a Stone Age cat, but I have a computer and I see Windows is having a Service Pack 3.
Correct.
And I was reading a little bit that Internet Explorer would be on by default. But that it's possible somehow to keep Internet 6 if you delete it and get it back, or what's anyway? Do you have any just primers on the Service Pack 3 if someone wants to keep Internet Explorer 6?
Let me ask you a question. Why would you want to keep Internet Explorer 6?
I have no idea. I was just reading. Well, I'm Stone Age. I have no idea. Maybe I should get out of the Stone Age and try Internet Explorer 7 then.
How old's your system?
It's probably 3 years, XP Home.
Okay. How much, do you know how much RAM you have in your computer?
Do
you know if it's 512, 1 meg, any?
Yeah, it's
How do you find out?
Yeah, I'm just looking on a piece of paper now.
Well, for those people who want to know more about their computers, there's two ways. One is if you click on Start and then go to My Computer, right mouse click on that and click on Properties, you'll see a whole bunch of tabs, and one of them you can click on is, you know,
right,
information
right.
and tells you the CPU in your machine and how much RAM you have.
Right.
Another way is to download an application called Belarc Advisor, B-E-L-A-R-C, Advisor. And you could do a Google search, or I have it linked to on one of my pages. But that will download an application that will give you more than you want to know about your computer. You'll shake your head and go, I didn't know I had all this stuff. But anyhow, let's just move forward. In terms of Internet Explorer 6 versus 7, 7 is a better browser. You're going to be more current with web technology. You can import your bookmarks from 6, or it probably automatically does it. As far as applying Service Pack 3, one thing to do is make sure you do create a restore point, even though they do it, so that you could go back to, you know, if your system wasn't working right before or after you. After you install Service Pack 3, you can go back to the prior
settings.
Otherwise, you don't really have any option. I have gotten positive feedback from a number of people, including myself and other coworkers, in terms of applying Service Pack 3. It hasn't affected compatibility with any software that I've experienced, which is just real common. Stuff like Word or Adobe products. It seems to make the system more stable, and it seems to fix some of the little problems that I've had along the way. So it's something that I would recommend doing, but it is a large download. It is, I believe, close to 340 meg for download, so it's not something I would recommend with a dial-in connection.
Yeah.
You might try and see if you can get someone to burn it to a CD for you. Or if you have a high-speed connection, then download, save the file to your system first, know where you save it, and then run it. Don't try to run it as a download.
And I have 512 megabytes of RAM, so what it says.
Yeah, you should be fine. You might want to consider one of your upgrades to your system. You might want to consider adding extra memory. If you run the Belarc Advisor, it's probably about 98% correct in terms of the memory ports or banks that you have occupied and what's in them. I've seen one error where it's stated it incorrectly. You could also go online and check your model and do a search and look at, you know, type setup or installation guide and take a look at, you know, what kind of memory slots you have available. Memory is pretty inexpensive. And I would, you know, it would be something I would recommend doing. If you could pull one out and put a 1 gig strip in, your system's going to be a lot faster and you'll enjoy it more. Yeah. I've seen it speed up a lot of slow older machines to the point where they're actually tolerable and usable.
Okay. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, yep. Thanks
Good
a
luck.
Lot for calling. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you have a question about your computer, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. In Madison at 263-1890. And email us at talk@wpr.org. Joe and Racine is up next. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Larry. How are you today?
Pretty good. Thanks for calling.
Great. I have a question for Peter. I have a 8-year-old PC. It has the Millennium Edition. And when I try to go to my paint program, I get an error message that says there is an error MFC42.dll. And then it says MS Paint will now close. I cannot get into that paint program. What do I have to do?
It sounds like that file got corrupted because it's Paint's obviously trying to access that DLL file.
Mm-hmm.
I've put up a number of resources. I believe it's listed on the tips page. I'm just trying to remember of it. There's a DL, a Microsoft DL. You could probably do a Google search on it, too.
Okay.
There's a MS DLL database out there that will help point you in the right direction. What you need to do is try to find how to if you have the original Windows ME CD, more than likely you're going to probably have to extract that off of the CD, and there's a way to do that.
In other words, a recovery disk?
No, not a recovery disk, but a Microsoft Windows Millennium Edition CD that's got the operating system on it.
Okay.
So that it can, just that file needs to be extracted. You don't want to write over the Windows installation. You just want to copy that file where it's missing.
Okay.
Or where it's corrupt.
Okay.
More than likely, it's under the window. You could do a search on your system for that file and see where it might be located. You know, you might be able to locate it with a search, but it's just not, it's got a problem with it. So you need to replace it. So it's,
what would cause a corruption like this?
You know, the computer works in a series of on-off switches. So if a hard drive, for example, not necessarily that it's going bad, but it just kind of hiccups.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of an on-off switch being a sequence of 0-1, it changes to 1-1 in that file. Just that file.
In that one.
No other files on your computer are affected, but it just happens to hiccup on that one file for whatever reason.
Okay.
That's what causes the problem.
All right.
So
good luck.
Thank you very much.
There's no, you know, no rhyme or reason why it happened to pick that, but you noticed it because you're trying to run the paint program.
Sure.
The other thing is, you know, just do a Google search on, you know, Microsoft Paint. Windows Millennium, and you know, the name of the file, and see what you come up with. And then Microsoft also has MS News Groups. I've got links to the Microsoft News Groups off of the InfoStar Virus Info Center page on the top under forums. It's not as simple like Microsoft News Groups. You might type it in with Google and see what you come up with that way too.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. Everett in La Crosse is up next. Hi, Everett.
Hi, how's it going?
Good.
I think I have a similar problem to the last caller. It's with Windows Millennium Edition, but the driver error comes up the minute that I get past the user sign-in screen.
Okay.
And so I can't do anything. Like, none of my icons come up, and yeah, like, that's pretty much it. And if I click close on the error, then even the start bar on the bottom disappears.
Hmm. How long have you had the problem?
For about 2 weeks.
Okay.
I just can't use my computer.
Okay. You know, one thing I forgot to mention, the Windows Millennium Edition has a restore feature built into it. So if you notice a problem happening but it wasn't there, you know, let's say 2 days ago, and you have an access point prior to when the problem showed up, you could go back and run a restore. It doesn't affect the data files, but it will affect anything that's been installed between those two dates. So what you might want to try with your system is if you have you ever put your system in the safe mode?
Yeah.
Do you know how to do that?
Yeah.
Where you hit the you reboot your system,
right,
when it's coming up, you hit the F8 key and then choose number 3 for safe mode. If you bring it up under the safe mode and it comes to a desktop where you can, you know, actually get into programs, try clicking on start and then accessories, start programs, accessories, system tools, and then system restore, and then see if there's an access point, you know, go back, you know, maybe at the first or second week of May, and see if there's an access point you can pick to try and restore to.
Right, okay.
There might have been a program that affected, you know, without your knowledge, something happened. There could be other issues, but that would be one thing that I would try to do. I mean, there could be other hardware issues going on.
Yeah, maybe because I tried. My friend gave me some XP disks, and I tried to just load those up, but I don't even meet the system's requirements.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if I could still keep this computer and maybe order one of those $5 Linux disks or something. Would my computer be able to run?
The thing you need to do when you're trying to convert to another operating system, there's two parts here. Number one is if you're trying to upgrade a Windows system to another Windows system, that the original Windows install needs to be stable. In other words, you really can't have any significant problems with it because it'll carry over and it may make your system unusable. Okay?
Right, okay.
And number two is if you're going from Windows to Linux or a version of, you know, there are a lot of permutations of Linux.
Yeah, like a smaller one would probably be better.
Right. But if you're going to another operating system, you need to make sure that you identify in your computer all the different hardware products, such as your video card, your network adapter. I would probably even, you know, make sure there might be something with your hard drives, your CD or DVD player. But all the different components using something like Blark Advisor would tell you all these different products that you have in your system, because you're going to need those device drivers for the version of Linux that you're going to try to install. And
okay,
if you don't
have like a floppy disk.
Well, floppy disk or another CD with all of them on it, but if you don't have those, then there are certain pieces of your hardware that won't be able to talk to the new operating system you're trying to put on. So you need to do that before you try to put it on. You need to research that. Otherwise, you could be dead in the water and, you know, going back to square one with Windows again.
Good luck. Thanks, Everett, for calling. And Pam in Fenimore is up next. Hi, Pam.
Hi. I was hoping for some tips. I'm in the market to be purchasing a laptop or notebook computer for my daughter who's going to college this fall.
Okay.
And I need something economical, but she wants an Apple or Mac. She's got her heart set on that. And I think there's software packages available through the UW system that you could get those, you know, at a lower rate. But she has a lot of music files, you know, through an iPod and pictures and books and writing.
Right.
And I'm wondering if I should be talking to somebody when she registers next week or what options to look for with a computer now and what to get later when she starts college or what do you suggest the route I take?
Well, there are a lot of options, a lot of choices out there.
I know that.
Yeah. You know, one is to look at a few options in terms of models, manufacturers, and to get reviews of them, you could go to a website like CNET.com, CNET.com, and or also PC Magazine or PCMag.com, and they would give you, you know, reviews of products, you know, either just like the one you picked or, you know, perhaps like an editor's choice that might have, you know, done something better than the one that you're looking at.
But if she wants a Mac, you're going
to... But if you want a Mac, you're limited to what Apple, you know, is selling. My feeling on they want a Mac is if they're taking classes that are Apple-specific, in other words, the products like Adobe Creative Suite 3, they do run better on a Mac platform. And the Mac is better working with audio, video, desktop publishing kind of files. It's just better in terms of memory management and dealing with those. But if they're going to school and they've got a lot of music and they're writing papers and they're getting on the web and they're going to Facebook or MySpace and doing that kind of stuff and then chatting on IM... a Windows laptop is going to work just fine for their needs. And it'll interact with their iPod. My kids, you know, do all of the above. And, they asked me for the Apple, and I said, you know, good luck with that choice. It's not that I don't like Apple. I'm an advocate. I'm just telling you that for the expense and the cost, you have some great options in the price range of $500 to $800 that has, you know, a nice color display, more than adequate video card, DVD burner, plenty of RAM, probably 2-3 gigabytes of RAM. I've seen 4 gigs coming out in some of them, plenty, more than adequate hard drive space, you know, stereo speakers, network, built-in network card, built-in wireless. So I'm just saying that unless they can really, you know, plead the case that they're, you know, going to be a audio, video, or desktop designer, graphic specialist, and really need the Mac for the work that they're doing, it's more of a luxury.
Okay.
Because of the expense. Because of the expense.
Yeah.
Okay.
The price. Larry, are you going to?
Well, yeah. I love the Mac, so I'd get the Mac anyway. But if it's a question of, you know, there is quite a difference in cost.
Yeah. And the other thing is, to me, the Mac laptop becomes more of a visual magnet for theft.
Yeah.
Because of the, because you are paying that extra premium for it. I'm not, it's great. I would love one too, but I'm just, you know, for what I do and traveling around, it wouldn't be justifiable because it would be that magnet that I wouldn't want to carry.
Yeah.
So I hope that helps. You could talk to someone else like me that might say, you know, get the Mac.
Yeah.
But
and I don't know. She's might
for you,
going into
for you,
English,
not for
and maybe
her.
That publishing would be something she'd want to look into. I'll have to discuss that with her further. But
yeah.
Those other issues have been something holding me back.
Yeah.
I appreciate your help.
Yep. Thanks, Pam. Let us know sometime how it all turned out.
And Larry's sitting here. Get the Mac.
Well, there's a lot of good reasons to have one.
I'm not arguing with that.
Theo in Eau Claire, it's your turn. Hi.
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 I have a question about Internet Explorer. When I go to open up a separate tab,
okay,
it just says connecting and freezes up, and I try it and program, and it doesn't work, and I have to reboot the whole system.
Have you tried what it sounds to me like something happened with the installation with did you have it since you put in Internet Explorer 7 or has this been going on for a long time?
It's been going on for about last month.
Okay. What I would try and do is probably go to the Internet Explorer 7 page or Microsoft's page, you know, for downloading Internet Explorer 7 and see if you can download it again and reinstall it.
All right.
It might have to write over a file that's just, you know, causing a problem that, you know, causing the problem that you're having.
Right.
Because usually what happens when you click on to, you know, to have that tab open, there's nothing there. And unless, you know, you have like a half a dozen home pages, so when you log on, they all should come up. And then you click on that open tab. You're really not telling it to go anywhere until you put an address in. So,
correct. It doesn't even give me that blank page.
Right. So I would try and, you know, see if you can do a download and update it. It might even be a reported problem. See, you know, one thing that everybody assumes is all of the systems are really the same, that because they're all running, you know, Windows XP Home or Windows XP Professional. And even like systems from the same manufacturer I've seen have different problems, brand new, in trying to do a simple installation. So it could have glitched when, you know, you upgraded to that. Or for some reason, again, you know, the hard drive not necessarily having a problem, but just skipping a beat, and it happened to be on that particular file within the application that's causing the problem.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And let's take another call. Bob in Toma is up next. Hi, Bob.
Hello.
Hi.
The question I have is it possible to get a computer to the point where you're – computer isn't physically of handling the upgrades you've done to it?
Yes.
the situation I've got is I've got an older computer I got from a friend of mine. It was originally an industrial application, and I hooked that to a server running 95. It had about 96 megs of RAM in it and 866 Pentium 3 in it. It's only got two slots for RAM, so now I'm running two 256 cards in it, and I've upped the processor to a 1.4 gig Celeron. But the thing just seems to sometimes take forever to think about what it wants to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, upgrading CPUs and memory on a system board, if you've managed to do that, which it sounds like you have,
yep.
It's not only that, but there are other considerations. There are other support chips on that system board.
Okay.
And there are what they call bus speeds that also affect the speed of systems. There are hard drive interfaces that also affect bus speeds. For example, yesterday I was talking with someone about when I upgraded a server in the last couple of years, it was, okay, SCSI, Ultra SCSI was, you know, a server kind of hard drive, and IDE evolved into what are called SATA drives and then SATA2 drives. And what's happened over time is the interfaces between the devices and the machines have been beefed up to the point where the less expensive technology has gotten much faster than what was considered the ultra higher speed technology from within 5 years ago. So you could do these little bits of upgrades, but your system is still being choked in different parts of it. So depending upon... You know, the Windows operating system is graphical. So if you've got parts that are being affected by video and video memory and more files trying to be accessed off of the hard drive, and you don't have that hard drive interface and the drive isn't spinning fast enough, all these things start creating these bottlenecks.
Okay.
So when I talk to people about upgrading the systems, you look at one, maybe two items to upgrade, and then you cut it off. Because if you start adding up the costs of beyond that second questionable upgrade, whatever it might be, you're looking at a substantial investment in a new low-end system that would be faster than what you have.
Yeah.
It would have more better speed, more hard drive space, more memory. I'm just saying, when you start comparing apples to apples, you're not going to get apples to apples. You're going to compare apples to oranges, and you're going to start looking at how much money have I put into mine versus, you know, a newer low-end system, and compare those, and you'll be amazed at, you know, the speed specification differences.
So I might just be better off just looking for something different here.
I'm
not trying to bring you bad news. I'm just saying you might have reached the physical limit, like you mentioned when you first called in.
That's just, you know, I was just, that's the only thing I could think of on air, but I wasn't sure. I mean, the machine runs real well. I mean, everything, I run XP Pro on it and Explorer 7, and it, I mean, we got a dial-up. We live way out in the middle of nowhere, so that's my only choice. But, you know, I thought about maybe putting a little bigger hard drive in it. I only got a 20 gig hard drive in it, but
There are other things you can do. Make sure things like your recycle bin are resized. If you click on right mouse, click on your recycle bin, and then click on properties. Make sure the default size of that recycle bin is about 1%. Yeah. You know, little things that you can do to free up hard drive space at Windows that you don't want Windows trying to hog on you.
Yeah, it's the one thing I have noticed, though, when you do run a system check on it, it never shows the full 512 RAM on it. It's always like 496 or 494.
Yeah, that's another thing. You're sharing the memory of your computer with the video card.
Yeah, it's got a built-in video in it. It doesn't even have a port for an external one, and it's, like I said, it's kind of...
Right, and that's one of your speed issues right there, is shared video memory is slower than a dedicated video card.
Okay.
Yep.
All right, thank you.
Yep, good luck.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Lynette in Madison is up next. Hi, Lynette.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Good. Hey, I have Outlook Express, and it gives you the option to block emails that you don't want to receive anymore.
Right.
But it doesn't seem to speak to the future of the email. It's like I can block it, but then it'll come in.
What you can do is, what you might want to do is set up a folder in your within your inbox that you can call it junk or discard or whatever.
Okay.
And create a rule of stuff that comes in, and it just automatically sends it to that folder.
So when I get a bum email, I take that email and slide it into the folder?
It will automatically go there. You direct it. There's on my tips webpage, so you go to infostar.com and click on tips. I don't remember which one it is, but one of them talks about email and setting up rules within Outlook Express to do that. And also you could go to a website called InsideOE.com. So that's InsideOutlookExpress.com. And that's put up by one of the MVPs, Microsoft's Most Valuable Professionals, that focuses in on Outlook and Outlook. I believe it's Outlook Express. And they would have that information there as well.
Okay, and your website again where I can find those tips is?
Infostar.com, InfoStar.com.
Great. Thanks so much for your help.
Yep. Good luck.
Thanks a lot for calling. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking computers with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison. Larry Mueller here. And our next caller is Andy from Mercer. Hi, Andy.
Hi, Larry. Hi. Peter. Peter, I'm running Windows XP with Outlook 2002, which is the XP edition.
Okay.
And I've gotten where I cannot receive the email. I can send it out, but it will not come in. And I look at my POP account, SMTP account, it's fine. Nothing has changed, and I haven't changed anything in there.
Now, are you using an email address with your ISP or with your own domain?
I'm doing ISP.
Okay. Have you tried to log in using like a web browser to get into your email to see?
I can get I'm using Gmail, and I am getting my mail through that.
Okay.
I'm just forwarding it through from my ISP to that. So it's coming through to there, but it will not come down through Outlook.
Okay.
I tried using Detect and Repair, and I'm getting an error message from Windows Installer saying installation source of this product is not available when I have the CD in the drive, and I even point to it, and it still doesn't recognize it. So I've tried replacing, updating Windows Installer and see if there's a problem with that. And I put in edition 3.1, and it still doesn't make any difference.
So have you talked to your ISP to see if there's anything that they did to change?
Yeah, and they said it sounds like an Outlook problem, of course.
Okay. One of the things that I've tried is resetting up an account. So, you know, write down or take pictures with Microsoft Paint, you know, of your account settings. You know, and delete the account and then close out of Outlook, do a restart of your system, and then go back in and, you know, add the user and add the information. Maybe there's something in one of the fields that you're not catching, or by seeing it after you write everything down or examine the pictures, realize that there's something that actually is off. That could be one reason. The other is to, you know, go to some of the resources that are out there for Outlook, like I mentioned, the MVPS.org, Microsoft Most Valuable Professionals. There are people that focus on...
Would you repeat that address again, please?
It's MVPS.org.
Okay.
And then they have what's called the Big List, which shows all the people that are involved in all the different Microsoft products. So there would be someone that focuses in on Outlook. And some of them have active forums or discussions about different problems that you can search on. And others have a listing of, you know, peculiar things that they, you know, have found out, problems that they've dealt with. And you might be able to find some help that way. But the first thing I would try is you know, write down the settings or take a picture. You can use Microsoft Paint and then hit print screen, and then Control C is the copy the screen, and Control V to paste it into Paint is the shortcut versus clicking on edit and then copy and edit and then paste. And then, you know, redo the settings. Sometimes you find, you know, the error that way. Somehow I've seen, for whatever reason, you know, the fields get propagated with, you know, erroneous stuff that you didn't put in there, but somehow it got shoved in.
Okay.
So hopefully that'll help.
Good luck.
I'll give it a try. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Andy. And on to Amos in Sauk County. Hi, Amos.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Peter.
Hi.
Well, I'm going to call on Larry's side on this Macintosh issue. you can't just look at the cost of the unit. You have to look at the cost of operating it and how reliable the thing is. And, and the huge thing for Apples, I mean, I don't know anybody that gets an Apple and goes back the other way. And one of the big reasons is viruses and worms and stuff. And, you know, at some point they're probably going to start targeting the Apples. But that's a huge income thing right there. And reliability is huge. Compatible systems when you buy things. I know supposedly Windows has gotten better over time, but I switched to Macs like 9-10 years ago, and used to have these arguments with my students and stuff who were geeks and who loved to work all weekend trying to solve one little problem on their computer. And, you know, I said, well, look, you know, I don't want to spend $75. I want to get a computer that I buy the component, plug it in, and the thing works. And I've got a laptop that I've been using probably 14 hours a day for 4 years now. And I did have one hard drive issue a couple years ago, but things as reliable
things work
as it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, so, anybody can sell the cheapest thing possible. Have you looked at the warranties on those laptops? That I went all around town trying to buy a PC laptop, found out there was no such thing as a warranty on the screen. And it's like, forget it. I mean, that's the thing that's going to go out first. So anyway, that's my plug for Larry's side of the
thing. Hey.
Thanks.
Thanks, Amos. Yeah, I got to agree with Amos.
You know, I love the Apple commercials with PC and Mac. I just get her just chuckle on that stuff because it's true. that's why they do them.
See, I just think it's worth the extra money to avoid all those other problems.
I just question, you know, the user that it's being put in the hands of. That's, you know, when you talk about cost, reliability, but it's, you know, the user. Who is getting that? Okay.
Yeah.
If it was you and I, you know, there's not a question, but when you're putting it in the hands of a 17, 18, 20 year old, forgets to close the dorm door, you know, or apartment, five finger lift, you know, and what is the overall, you know, use of that machine?
No.
I debated it internally, and I said, it ain't happening. Not for my kids.
Scott in Eau Claire, it is up to you. Hi, Scott.
Hi, I appreciate you taking my question. I just have a quick question. I've been looking at voice over IP systems lately.
Yep. Okay.
And looking at Vonage and things like that. I guess I'd like to do it because I'm not a big fan of Charter.
Okay.
And but I guess the major complaint that I've read about a lot of the voice over IP systems is problems with 911, and you have to register your address, and then people have called up, and their address isn't registered. And so I'm just wondering if you have an opinion on ones that you would recommend.
So you're talking about using it for the home, not for business?
Yeah, just for home.
Okay. Well, the voice over IP means that you're sharing your phone with your internet service. So, that, you know, that's where the problem comes in terms of, you know, the registration of the phone number because it's really an IP, you know, connection, even though you think it's coming to your phone. So that's where, you know, if you're making those changes, yes, you do need to make sure the authorities know, you know, that it's coming from you. The other issue is if the internet is down, then your phone is down. So if you're sharing it that way, if you don't have an alternative means of calling out with like a cell phone, then you really have no communication. So, you know, that to me, that's a, you know, a big drawback. Is, you know, if your phone, your internet's down, your phone's down, you're losing both of them. In a business environment, and I know this doesn't apply to you, the advantage of voice over IP is for multiple locations, i.e. a bank or a pizza or insurance company, can look like they're all in the same location, but they could be across town or they could be in different cities because you could give out one phone number and you could actually have it routed to reach everybody. But in the case of home, the thing that really frightened me away from signing up for the unlimited is, and the voice over IP is that your phone is down when your internet's down. And with the way the cell phone companies have gotten aggressive with anytime minutes or, you know, nighttime weekend minutes, or even having you buy into earlier, you know, long distance calling like after 7 p.m. versus 9 p.m., you know, for an extra fee. We as a family primarily use our cell phones for making any kind of long distance calls. So,
Sounds good. I appreciate it.
Hopefully that helps make your decision a little easier.
Bill in Menominee, it's your turn. Hi, Bill. Bill, are you there?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Hi. I really messed up my laptop. And I can turn it on, and it goes to the password. I can put in the password, and then it might take a long time. Then it might go to the desktop, and then up comes this active desktop recovery white screen. And I think what I've done is probably deleted some drivers because I was rummaging around in there, you know, not knowing what I'm doing and supposedly cleaning things up. And I think System Restore is gone too.
Okay.
What should I do to, I mean, you know, start with that?
What are you using, Windows 98?
No, it's XP.
It's XP. And you said System Restore is gone as well?
Yeah.
What
is that kind of a thing where I just have to reload everything somehow, or?
Have you tried getting into the safe mode at all?
I have. Well, the F10 startup thing, is that what you mean?
F10, it might be also F8 as well, but when you you bring your computer up and just right about when it says starting Windows,
right,
you can hit F8 and then it gives you a choice, and one of them is to choose number 3 to go into the Windows safe mode.
Okay.
And then if you go in there and it comes up to, you know, lets you go into your desktop, it'll tell you might have video, that it's only going to display stuff in the standard video mode, which is 640 by 480. If you can go into, click on Start, then Programs, then Accessories, and then System Tools, and, you know, I would try and run a disk cleanup and then maybe a disk defragmentation and see if you can get your system to come back up after you do that. So after you run those two things, then do a shutdown, bring your computer up, and then shut it down again. You don't really need to log in. You just shut it down again, bring it back up, and see if you can get your system to work that way. If it does work, you could probably, if Restore is still not working, it's kind of chancy, but you might want to see if you can get a copy of XP Service Pack 3, and maybe you could apply that and see if it brings you back to where you were. The only other option I can think of is that you would have to do a Windows repair if you have. And this is where it gets a little tricky. If you have the actual Windows operating system CD, there is a repair feature. And I recommend you research it before you actually do it. And there's a way to actually try and repair your operating system. So probably before you apply the XP Service Pack 3, and like we mentioned before, if it's broken, it's probably not a good idea to apply it. So try and do the repair first, and then if you get the repair to work, then I would do the Service Pack 3. It's Windows. If you do a Google search on Windows XP space repair, you'll probably find a number of pages out there that actually are almost like tutorials that step you through it. And you have to boot up with the CD, and you have to, you know, tell it to do it a certain way, and then it goes. And then you have to know where your Windows installation is, and typically it's in the Windows directory. And then what it'll do is rewrite those files and hopefully correct the problem that you're having.
Yeah, good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant here on the Ideas Network. Talking your personal computer now with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. Go online to his website at infostar.com. And one of the things you'll find there is a top 10 list. And Pete, we have another top 10 list for this month.
Yes, we do. So if you go to the current on the left side, current top 10 or the top 10 archives and scroll down to today's date, you'll find them right there. This first one is a speed test for your internet connection, and it tests both upload and download to see what you can see what you're paying for.
Yeah.
And it's called speedtest.net. This next one is instructions and tips on troubleshooting and repairing or recycling household things that break. And it's called fixitclub.com. So FIXITCLUB.com. Third one is an online marketplace where buyers can source commercial surplus or business inventory and also government surplus. And it's called liquidation.com. The fourth one, I don't know if you remember, I mentioned the air car a number of months ago.
Yeah.
The company licensed their technology to Tata Motors, not only for the air car, but also what they call the Tata Nano. Uh-huh. And that made the news because the price point on that car is $2,500. And it probably uses a high-end riding lawnmower kind of engine, but... Anyhow, you can find that at tatanano.com. This next one, and I'm giving people my secret for weight loss, Larry.
Which you've lost, what, 25 pounds?
25 pounds. And, you know, it's hard making those plateaus, you know, when you kind of stop. And I'm getting pretty close to where I want to be. But if you go to fda.gov. The official homepage for U.S. Food and Drug Administration. I put a link that's about losing weight, start by counting calories. And the key thing, I can summarize the key thing, aside from counting calories, which, you know, we're taught math probably at a very young age, is having a good breakfast.
Yeah.
They found that the success to people that have kept it off for years and being consistent is starting your day with a good breakfast. So... if you've heard that, it's not from me. It's been from a lot of other people, and it's really true. All right, number six, photographic documentation of global climate change can be found at worldviewofglobingwarming.org. So that's a mouthful.
Yeah.
So worldviewofglobalwarming.org. And what's interesting to note is the U.S. enacted on May 14th of this year, so within the last few weeks, that the polar bear was officially listed as threatened by the U.S. Endangered Species Act because, you know, the ice cap is melting and they're having a hard time handling it. Next one is a great online, I call them e-zines, magazines. I believe it's still in print, but, you know, I don't get it in print. I get it online. That covers a wide variety of business topics, including investing, researching companies, technology, business schools, and more, and it's called businessweek.com. Number eight is that their mission is to make the internet safer for kids and families. I put a link to their well-organized website. They have a site map, and it's called protectkids.com. Number nine is access to free data and get help keeping tabs on a broad set of measuring or metrics in marketing, advertising, and publishing world, and it's called marketingcharts.com. So you can view it online. You can also download it into spreadsheet format and you manipulate it however you want. And then number 10 is for both large and small companies, for-profit or not-for-profit, and it's access to well-organized free management library to assist you with leadership and management of yourself, other individuals, as well as groups, and it's called managementhelp.org.
Okay.
And there are other links there, too, and plus last month's, and they're all there.
They're all there at infostar.com. Well, let's go to Ken in Minocqua next and see what's on Ken's mind. Hi, Ken.
Hi, Larry. We talked last month about my getting an air cart.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And both of you had some interest in doing the same thing for your travels up north, so on and so forth.
And we're going to get a report.
Yeah, well, you're getting step one of the report. Oh, and by the way, Larry, I come down on your side very, very hard as far as the Apple is concerned for that, or the Macintosh for that student. And which brings up another question. I'll just draw it real quickly. I assume there's insurance that these kids can get.
Theft insurance. Homeowners insurance or something.
Yeah, and I don't picture that being excessive. So I mean,
but you know, the more occurrences on insurance claims, the more that everybody gets to pay. So.
True.
Well, what about this error card?
Okay, anyhow, I did purchase AT&T's version. My choices up here were AT&T and Altel. Inasmuch as I was an old Singular user, I just went with the flow, so to speak.
Okay.
It has, the thing works great. I have a Macintosh. It was running 10.2. Regardless of what the salespeople tell you, either their own or the stores, it will not run on 10.2. It must run on 10.4 or higher.
Oh.
And so, one, I had to upgrade, which cost me a couple hundred bucks, but that was well worth it because I haven't done anything with that machine for 6 years. Okay. Another reason to buy Apple. The email portion of the thing is great. I mean, it upped my speed tremendously. I have good access here.
When you say good access, have you done a speed test at all?
I'm not sure what you mean.
You know, how fast is your internet connection? I mentioned in the top 10 speedtest.net. So when you're on using your web browser, you can just, go to that website and then click on, they call it an orange pyramid, and you'll be able to do a speed test with your connection. So it'll tell you how fast you're downloading web pages, and if you were to upload files to create a website, it would tell you how fast you would do the upload as well.
Okay.
Speedtest.net.
Yep.
Right.
But go ahead.
Okay. Anyhow, email downloads and everything tremendously faster than what I was getting with my dial-up. My internet connection is slow. It is terrible. And I'm thinking, well, maybe it's my browser. I'm running Firefox. and as we speak now, I'm downloading Safari to try that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like a comment on that. Secondly, my printer somehow got screwed up. It might be coincidence, but that's also a problem that I'm incurring with the air cart.
Mm-hmm. The printer would be more of a 10.4 issue and not with the air card that you're using.
Okay.
As far as the web speed, so you're saying it's slower than your dial-in?
I get into the internet site, I'd say, as fast as the dial-up, maybe faster.
Right.
But then negotiating within that site takes forever.
Are there? Do you know if there's any settings or options that you can change? You know, I haven't used what you're basically creating with your laptop is a hotspot. You know, you're accessing the hotspot through the air card to the Singular internet service. So what did they promise or tell you how fast your throughput would be?
They indicated, at least 3, if not 5 times faster.
Three to five times faster than, 56K?
Correct.
So they're saying 150 to 250K access.
Correct.
Okay.
you bring up a question. I've done nothing to disconnect my old modem. I mean, I'm using the modem that is in the air card.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that could possibly be an interference.
I don't think it would be, but you should probably, you know, you can call them up and talk to them. They should be able to, you know, look at you and try, you know, in a sense ping you and see what kind of access they're getting from you to them, and vice versa, and see if there's some options that they might give you to make changes.
All right.
Because there may be maybe too much handshaking going on when your end is negotiating with the internet, which is slowing your system down. So they may have some shortcuts that they might suggest, you know, or changes to make that might help speed it up. But it is successful that you are hooking up. It's just that you need to make it a little bit better.
Yeah. Good luck, Ken. Thank you.
And that's where the text for the ISPs come in play. For example, this weekend we switched over to from Charter to DSL, so cable to DSL. And I called in and we ran the test, and he said, you know, you should be using a shorter phone cable and a longer Ethernet cable. So I said, fine, I can do that. I've got everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that, made no difference. So they're sending a technician out to see what they can do from the outside to make it better. So, you know, always talk to the ISP and see what recommendations they have to improve things.
Thanks, Ken. Fred in Madison is up next. Hi, Fred.
Hi. I'll get right to the point. I've got a Dell Dimension 8100 Pentium 4 that won't with Windows Millennium, and it won't start in the safe mode. I ran ScanDisk, and that ran. I tried to run Defrag, and it won't run in DOS. So I'm kind of stuck. I don't have a boot disk for Windows Millennium because this came with all preloaded. So what I'm really looking for, I think, is a boot disk for Windows Millennium. I did download a couple from the internet, but the technology that I saved them to, the CD-ROM and a flash drive, are not compatible with my old system. So. And I don't have any 3.5-inch disk anymore.
Right. But you do have access to a CD or DVD on the system, right?
I do.
Yeah.
And I've got it on a CD, but the formatting on the CD that I saved it to is not compatible with the drive that I have.
So you're telling me that you can't use the CD drive?
I can use it. I can put the system, the Millennium system disk in.
Right.
And I can get to the DOS prompt.
Okay.
And that's it. It won't run. And I did run Defrag or ScanDisk from that.
Right.
But it doesn't do much else.
Okay. One option, I mean, do you know if it was an upgrade or a clean install for Windows Millennium?
It would have been a clean install. It came preloaded from Dell, and I've never done anything to it.
Right. One thing, you know, if you do want a Millennium Edition disk is you could probably find one on eBay and do a search on Windows Millennium. And, you know, I don't know what the prices are on them, but that would be one way to acquire it. I can't imagine it would be very much because most people would move forward to, you know, Windows XP.
Right.
So that would be one way to find it and then, you know, try and repair the operating system with that. The only other option, are you getting any specific error messages or are you just, you know?
No, it just, you know, I could start to run the startup system again to reload it, but I do get an error message when I do that, and I get an SU99405 error. It says update LNIF. And then there's an OX195 as part of that message.
Do you have access to the internet to try and research what those error messages mean?
Well, I'm trying to get an old iMac set up,
to
get into my email and get back. So I do.
Right.
That's what I'm trying. But
yeah, the other thing, you know, you could go to the public library. You know, gives you access to, or you know, a neighbor.
Oh, right.
You know, to do that, but
if I have a startup disk. What's the likelihood that it's going to come back?
You need to have an install disk or Windows Millennium setup install disk that is for a clean install, not a restore, because they are two different. They are definitely different. Because the upgrade looks for a previous installation and is sold at a lower value than one that is for a full installation. What's percentage-wise? I don't want to say it's 50-50, but, my question is, what else is going on? Is there something else going on with the computer?
Well, I think so, because every time I've had some startup problems for a while where it wouldn't boot, and I'd have to shut all the power off, turn it back on, and it would run scan disk, and then it would come back on.
Yeah, it could be a problem with the power supply being flaky and not giving enough power to the hard drive, which can cause fragmentation issues and boot up problems. Could have a problem with I've seen problems with the video card, can cause that as well. Did you mention anything about being able to do a restore, using the Windows, restore?
I haven't tried that.
Okay. If you can get into, click on Start, click on Programs, then Accessories, System Tools. You should see System Restore listed there.
Yeah, I can't. The operating system never comes up.
So
the best I can do is get to the DOS prompt.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're going to have to go back to
DOS again.
No, you don't want to do that. But you'll probably, I guess I would see and try if I could get a hold of a Windows Millennium disk. That would be the first thing to try.
Yep. Give that a shot.
Yep.
And thanks, Fred. Pete in La Crosse, hi to you.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Peter. I hope the background noise is tolerable here. I'm borrowing a phone at the food co-op in La Crosse. Hey, people need to know that many of the distributions or, as Peter says, flavors of Linux, they come in a format that's called a live CD. And a live CD, you just lay that in your CD drawer and boot the computer as normal. As long as it's set to C, a bootable CD, it'll bring up the whole Linux system. Enough for to run the whole computer. It'll allow you to check out your graphics driver, your network card, the whole thing. It's just that everything is on the CD instead of being on hard disk, as it is normally when a computer operates.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit slower, but you get to explore everything and make sure everything works. And then if things are to your satisfaction, then you click on the install option, and it copies everything to your hard disk. But two other things. One is if you get that far and everything works, but you're still a little on the nervous side, you can easily open your computer and swap out the hard disk for one that you just bought used. If it's an older computer, you can probably get a hard disk for $10 or $15 off eBay. Put that in there and then install the Linux on that. And then if it still isn't to your satisfaction, of course, your other hard disk is intact. And I like to think if a guy can change a spark plug, he can change a hard disk, because as long as you're replacing identical with identical, there's just nothing to plugging them in. And the last thing is really easy, and that is if a person is looking for a device driver and they're not sure if it's available, just go into Google and type in the name of your operating system, Ubuntu or whatever, and then the identifier for the device, and it'll show up, or you might see hard luck stories, but then you'll know before you dive in too deep. But that live CD is what people need. And by the way, you don't have to buy live CDs. You can go to a friend's house with high-speed internet and download them legally, because Linux is free. Burn yourself a CD, take it home, put it in the CD drawer, and go to town on it.
Wow.
Sounds good.
Lots of good points.
Sounds
thanks,
like a weekend project.
Hey.
Or an evening project.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, Pete.
Sure.
Appreciate the call. All right. Some good tips there. Let's go to Joe in Wausau. Hi, Joe.
Hi. I hope the customer who is talking about voice over IP is still listening. I have Vonage, and I wanted to clear up the whole 911 issue.
Yeah.
Vonage has a system that works with all of the 911 stations in the nation, and when you sign up for Vonage, they automatically put your address into the 911 system. And I have to vouch for how incredibly wonderful it is. I pay $10 a month for Vonage and an additional $5 a month for a 1-800 number. So So anybody can call me from anywhere, and I can call anywhere for free.
Wow.
And I have a little prepaid phone, a cell phone that costs me $5 a month that I use just in case my internet goes down. But my internet rarely goes down, so I find that it's a lot cheaper than using cell phones or a landline phone. And I really just I had to vouch for the economic value of using voice over IP.
So let me ask you a question. What are the here in Madison? You know, I get bombarded with flyers for adding from Charter and TDS. You know, their phone service, the voice over IP, for, you know, $30 a month. So what you're basically saying is, you know, go outside of that.
Oh, yes, yes. Charter will charge you more. I guess the theory behind that is Charter uses a different bandwidth on their lines for it, so it's not taking up internet bandwidth.
Mm-hmm.
And Vonage does take up a little bit of your internet bandwidth, but it's just a voice stream. It's not like it's going to really make any difference to your mm-hmm. home network. So I really suggest just going with Vonage because it's quite a bit cheaper.
Sounds like there'll be some listeners exploring some new options.
Oh, yes.
Yep. Thanks, Joe.
Yep,
no
thanks.
Problem.
Yeah, appreciate the call. And maybe we got time for another quick one here from Mike in Oshkosh. Mike, got a quick one?
Oh, I don't know how to make it quick, but here we go. I have an old Windows ME machine that I very much like, but I've been forced into getting a laptop. I've got a couple laptops. The newest one has got Vista on, and I just really hate it. Mm-hmm. If I try browsing a folder that has graphic images in it, it takes forever to load. It tries to load every like a thumbnail of every image, and even if I just do details, it takes forever to load. Got any ideas how I can speed it up?
You said a new laptop. How much memory is in the new laptop?
2 gig.
2 gig. Not sure why it's taking. You said it's really taking a long time to.
Oh, minutes.
Something doesn't sound right
no.
there. I wonder. You know, just because it's new doesn't mean that it doesn't have glitches or mechanical issues.
Well, I used to be a network support specialist, so I download all of the patches and I go to HP's website and download the new drivers, and I'm very good at doing all of that stuff. But it just drives me nuts.
Yeah. Can you? What I would do, you know, it just doesn't sound right that it's taking, you know, a long time to do that, and everything is relative in terms of time. But if you can go back to where you purchased that, or try and find a similar model with the same specifications, and try and do some simple things like what you're trying to do, you know, make observations. I would probably call into the manufacturer's tech support and, you know, point that out to them and see how to rectify it, because that just doesn't make sense.
Doesn't make any sense. And with that, we have to close. Speaking of time, our time's up. Pete, thank you very much. We'll
always
look forward
great.
To
thanks, Larry.
Next July 1st.
Yep.
July 1st. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant, will be back on July 1. Tomorrow we'll talk about probiotics, for one thing, and then we'll take a look at skin tanning and skin cancer. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.